Folks, welcome back. We have a special episode for you today. I'm just hanging out with my friend Rachel, and she's here to do an interview, and we're going to talk about her brand new album, which is her very first album. So this is Rachel, everybody.
Hello.
So I have known Rachel for several years, and I have seen her grow as a wonderful musician in person, and we're going to talk about this lovely journey that she's taken to get to the point where she's releasing this fantastic album, and I'm sure everybody out there is going to love it. Because, well, who wouldn't?
Thanks.
Yeah. I might be a little, you know, impartial to...
A little biased.
just a little.
Just a tiny bit.
So we're going to go through Rachel's whole fun journey here. At what point in time in your life did you know you had an interest in music?
Oh, there are photos of me pre-age 2 sitting in my opa's lap at the piano joining him when he would play. So I think it's safe to say that I've always been a performer and specifically wanted to do music from the word go. Basically, I was always playing on, there was a huge, huge upright old acoustic piano my grandparents brought with them when they moved into the granny flat at our house when I was 6. And so I was always down there messing about, started piano lessons by the age of 7. And then it was pretty much, I was about 10 or 11 when I started listening to a musician who's now local to me, Lorena McKennitt. And I sort of had this inkling of like, I kind of want to do this. Like, I want to write stuff because I think I have things in my head that I could get out, maybe.
And for those who might not be familiar with Lorena McKennitt, first day of my new tongue, Lorena McKennitt. Mm. I've been tripping over everybody's names today. This is nothing new.
All right.
She is a fairly famous musician who has toured all over the world and currently lives in Stratford, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I haven't played her on the show because, well, she's a big name and I'm here to support all the little peoples, right?
Yeah.
It's much more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then the world gets to discover all this fun music like they're going to get to do with yours that, you know, they may not have gotten to hear or may never have discovered because, well... Small people.
Yes.
Until you make it big.
Exactly. The algorithm doesn't like small people.
Not yet.
Not yet. We'll get there.
All of us little podcasts are trying to change that.
Yeah.
So music has always been part of your life. And you went to university for music.
I did. Yeah. My parents tried to talk me out of it. They convinced me to stay home a whole year after high school to be really sure that I wanted to pour my blood, sweat, and tears into being a musician. And I couldn't think of anything that I wanted to do more than music after that full year of working in a deadly boring factory. So I went very far away to Northwestern Iowa and got my Bachelor of Arts in Performance and Pedagogy of Classical Vocal Music. Yeah.
That's a mouthful.
It is.
And some people won't know what that big words mean.
Right. Well, performance is fairly accessible. Pedagogy is the technical term for how you teach. And I'm really glad that I went to that school because it was small enough that we got to do really small pedagogy classes where we explored different approaches to teaching and how to kind of develop your own teaching style. And we got to do practical kind of... I want to say experiments, but they're not experiments. So we got to do like kind of trial lessons and like people would sign up for free lessons with us as student teachers. And then they would come in and do like a clinic where our pedagogy teacher would watch us give them a lesson and then critique us, not them. So I was more nervous teaching than they were singing in front of everyone.
But it gave you experience to see if teaching was something you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you have done.
For a long time now. Yeah. I swore I would never, and here we are. I've been teaching individual lessons for 13 years here in Canada. I've been teaching since my senior year in high school, piano lessons and then voice lessons as well. And now I'm actually a music teacher at a private school for the arts here in Stratford.
So teaching can be rewarding and mm-hmm. very frustrating.
Very frustrating.
And having seen you teach.
Yes, you have.
Yep, because we've had that experience together working at the same location. Is there an experience from teaching that really stands out to you as being rewarding?
Oh, there's a few. The first one that comes to mind, and I'm blanking on his name, which is really frustrating to me. I had a student at Long & McQuaid who really loved classical piano but didn't want to do the exams and got really nervous about the exams. And his parents were all, you know, exams are the only way to go. And so I talked them into an experimental year where he prepped everything that you would play for an exam but then did it as a performance at one of our recitals. And so we got to really dive into the interpretation of all these grade eight pieces, and he memorized them all, and he played like essentially a 20-minute recital, which normally you wouldn't get to do until your third or fourth year in university, and this was his grade 11 year of high school. And that whole experience of working with him was amazing, and he even called me at the store a year later and just, you know, updated me on what he was doing with music and how rewarding it was for him to work with me on that and how it was still affecting how he played. And that was really lovely.
It's always fantastic when someone you work with reaches out to you down the road and says, hey, you had this big impact on my life.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm still doing.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing in my books,
mm-hmm.
no matter what field you're working in.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know there's people I would love to touch base with that we knew at Long & McQuaid and have no idea how to track them down anymore.
Right. Yeah. Another student I really loved working with was Katy Paradis. She was yep. always a bundle of fun, and, you know, she was like me, had a million plates on her table rather than just one. But she and her parents understood that music could be a way of just like personal expression and a way of getting value out of your life, as opposed to something that you had to like work really hard at only. And that's not to say she didn't work hard at her lessons, but the goal was not to perform or to pass an exam. The goal was for her to increase her level of enjoyment and her understanding of piano and who she was as a pianist. And she, you know, she came and volunteered at my school. She helped me rehearse for shows, and she got the whole kind of experience. She was thinking about going to become a music teacher in the public school system. And so then she got to do that with me and figure out if that was something she wanted to work towards.
Hands-on experience.
Yes.
Good thing before you spend all that time and energy in school to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I got to say, that's one of the things I miss most about Long & McQuaid is being able to watch all these kids grow
mm-hmm.
and have those aha moments when they figure something out, regardless of whether they were singing on the piano, with drums, guitar, whatever. It was mm-hmm. great. So they come down and go, oh my gosh, I got this. I finally understand this. And you're like, oh, yay. Today is a happy day.
Yeah. Those days are good.
Those
I like
days
those
are good.
Days a lot.
I miss those days.
Yeah, they're pretty fun. I have a student right now. She just started with me. She's just 5. She's a tiny little shrimp of a thing. Her name is Atwell. And she leads the lessons. So we do ukulele and we do piano and we do singing together. And she very clearly will tell me what she wants out of her time with me, which at age 5 is pretty impressive. But what amazed me the most was at one point I was singing Lost Boy and ukuleleing it, and she had her ukulele in her hands, my djembe in front of her, and would alternate strumming the chords that she knew with me in time, drumming a beat and singing and like trying out harmonies. And I was just like, this girl has all of the freedom of music that I just want everybody to have all the time.
Go for it. Try it. If it doesn't work, oh well.
Yeah.
No harm in trying.
I always talk about making musical messes in my classroom.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah.
Gotta try and make the mess an experiment, because you'll never know if it's gonna work if you don't try.
Exactly.
Fun. Oh, here's some weird questions for you.
Oh boy.
If you could, at any point in time in your life, perform with somebody, be it a composer, a musician, alive or dead currently, does not matter. Who would you want to perform with? And in what capacity?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have always wanted to sing with Josh Groban. That has always been a thing because, you know, girl-guy duets are a thing for musical theater people and classical musicians. It's always, you know, the soprano and the tenor. And we didn't get a lot of those opportunities. I didn't get a lot of those opportunities in university to do those that kind of stuff. But right now,
I know I've put you on the spot. It's,
yeah, hugely on the spot.
So while you're thinking about that part of it, if you were to get a chance to sing with Josh Groban, what would you want to sing with him? Would you want to do musical theater? Would you want to do pop songs?
I have a couple of his songs that I have obsessively practiced harmonies for, maybe, possibly. One is To Where You Are and Let Me Fall, which he sang for a Cirque du Soleil performance. Which is very cool.
Okay, so if there's any Josh Groban fans out there, write them letters. Tell them Rachel wants to sing with them.
Well, even if I could get to a concert when those are things again, he would often pick a person out of the crowd to sing with on some of his songs. So I always kind of wanted to see if I could make that happen.
That would be fun.
It'd be very cool.
I'd be down for that. I'll even go with you so you've got somebody with you.
Oh, I found one out. Actually, there's a female duo, and they have a backing band, called Rising Appalachia, and they do really cool kind of.
Yeah. My computer's just gone to sleep. It's never done this in the middle of an interview before.
Bluegrass folk kind of music. And I love their harmonies. I would love to perform with them. I think we could do a really neat fusion.
A trio instead of a duo.
Yeah. That with a lyrical piano on top of their like fiddle and banjo stuff.
Oh, okay. Let's see. If you reflect back on your life, what popular musicians have had a big impact on your life?
Well, I already mentioned one. Josh Groban was like the first inkling that classically trained voices could do more mainstream music. And then Michael Bublé was on the scene, and so obviously they're both guys, but they had that kind of vocal presence that a lot of the musicians I grew up with really didn't. Like, I listened to a lot of Avril Lavigne, and I guess as a songwriter I started getting a lot of inspiration from her when I was younger. Her very kind of autobiographical tone in her songs and stuff, but I was never a shouty kind of singer, so that didn't really resonate. My taste has changed a lot. Like, growing up, I listened to way old stuff. My dad was always listening to like ABBA and stuff from like the late 60s and early 70s. We listened to tons of Kansas and stuff like that. And then I was huge into musical theater during my teen years. That was when the movie version of Phantom of the Opera came out and Wicked came out, and I got to go see that a couple different times. And then I was in university and I did musical theater. Someone I fell in love with in university that I still really love listening to and get a lot of inspiration from is Mika. He's a European artist, and got a massive vocal range, but his piano ballads just like they hit every nail on the head. And Pink recently for me.
Pink's a good inspiration.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yep. So all of this and going to school and being involved in music and teaching, what made you decide to start writing your own stuff and actually put this album together?
I started going to Filk circles.
Filk circles are awesome.
Filk circles are very fun. And I started hearing people do original music just because they loved writing their own songs. And part of the reason why I hadn't ever finished a song that I had started writing, because I'd started writing songs when I was a teenager, and my mom got a guy over who was a worship leader. And he right away made me feel very dismissed and rejected. Looking back, I can see because I didn't fit into his box of how to write a song, not because I didn't have a good song on my hands. I still have the lyrics to that song. It will get made eventually. My way. But yeah, I started to hear people do original music that wasn't, you know, professionally produced or perfectly arranged. Like maybe there were too many verses, or, you know, the chorus didn't build into the bridge properly, or whatever it was. Like, you know, there's all these snags, but they could like workshop their songs. And then going to folk circles over a number of years, you hear how as a person performs a song more and more, it starts to refine itself and they start to figure out how they like to perform it. And that informs the structure, or maybe it informs some melodic changes or shifts throughout the song. And that started to really make me think, oh, you know, this isn't as inaccessible as I thought it was. There's not as much pressure on it as I thought it was. And also then I start to think, like, I could write songs just for me. And I could just write and just sing them to my heart's content and just like have the personal pleasure of I made music. Doesn't matter how many ears listen to it, I made it. Which very quickly turned into, oh, there are ears, listen to my music, because I am a performer.
But not a diva.
I try. I think I probably have diva moments.
Yeah, not as badly as some people.
Okay.
Yeah. It's okay to have a diva moment here and there when they're appropriate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So, folk circles, performing, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you've got more songs.
Yeah.
You're getting feedback from people on what they think is awesome, where mm-hmm. you can use some work. How much input did you get from Leslie on these things? And for those who don't know, Leslie's another Stratford musician that I've played on the show before. And don't worry, you're going to get to hear more of her music down the road.
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting thing. I didn't get a lot.
Really?
Yeah. So Leslie, it was never that she didn't want to be encouraging of me. It was just that, you know, I would present a thing and either she wouldn't be in a space to give feedback, or she would be exhausted and wiped out and not feel confident in, you know. And also I never really asked her to like workshop a thing with me. And so I'm trying to think of years. February of 2020, just before the world ended, I did a private concert for Leslie and Carrie and Janet, and did a whole, I think it was a full hour of original music, and said, you know, I feel like I need to start performing this or I'm never going to, and there will be costs to that. So I'm going to do a private concert for you guys, you know, have that under my belt, and then I'm going to go and bring these things out into the world. And I performed a song. I don't know how much I should say, because it's kind of personal. It's on the album. I performed Meeting the Phoenix, which is about Leslie. Because the biggest input I got from her was just her example. And you know, we would talk a lot about our pasts, which we have very parallel experiences in the ways that we grew up and the influences that we grew up around, and how that would feel to express it in a song, and, you know, the catharsis of and the healing of making music out of those experiences. And so to me, she was very much an example of rebirth and that kind of like creative spark. And she has a song called Catalyst, which is about her experience of being that spark for people. And so I performed Meeting the Phoenix for the first time, and she had a very positive reaction to it. So that was really validating.
That is always good feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the expressions people show on their faces hold more than the words they're going to say to you.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So that is quite the album that you've put together. There are what, 13 tracks?
14.
I can't count. They're out of order on my screen.
I know. It bothers 14. My brain.
The OCD says, not ordered right, wrong.
It's not the OCD. It's the fact that I put them in an order that tells a specific story. And so not being able to see the outcome of that work and thought that I put into them in that order is...
So now you all have a mission. When you listen to Rachel's album, please listen to it in the order it's in so that you can hear the story.
At least the first time. After that, I don't care.
Then you can listen to all your favorites. And yeah. I gotta say, I've listened to it out of order.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no complaints about the out of order. It is still a very good listen.
Yay.
So the process for putting this together, when did you decide that some of the songs you had written were going to be an album?
Well,
or did somebody reach out to you and say, hey,
Heather and Ben, from Amphis Music in Hamilton/Toronto had reached out to me because I was performing online concerts through their, site, onlineconcertthing.com. And they were excited about the music that I was making and had figured out a way to support new artists and get a grant actually to help me make my first album. And so they first reached out and said, you know, would you at all be interested in this? And I went, yeah. And then this past March we actually got the green light and they're like, we have money, we can make an album for you. And I was like, huh, okay.
And then
what do I do now?
You get the, I'm excited, but oh my gosh, I'm nervous and scared, and oh my gosh, but I get to make an album.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I had 50 plus songs written. And so it was really about going through and thinking, like, what do I want to put forward as me for a first album? And so I chose songs that are all extremely personal. And I mean, they tell my story, but I don't think that my story is only mine. I think it's very applicable across the human experience. We've all gone through periods of loss and change and betrayal on various levels, and, you know, finding a purpose that you didn't expect, and, you know, feeling rejected by people that you thought were going to accept you no matter what. So it's my story, but I am at a place now where I'm comfortable letting it be other people's stories and having them. I've even written an invitation in the lyric book that I made that, like, these are your songs now. You can overlay your own experience onto them and into them and hear into the song whatever you need out of it, which is something I never thought I would be able to do with my music.
That's awesome. So what was it like working with Ben and Heather? Listeners of the show are most, at least some of the ones that have been here forever,
yeah,
are familiar with Heather's music. I play Heather's music a lot.
Okay.
I think I've played Fortune a dozen times on the show or more.
Such a good song.
And I'm still wishing she would put that down into sheet music, because I can play a little by ear, but yeah. I would love to have that written down in mm-hmm. front of me and make that one of the songs that I get to play for fun. Yeah. Enjoy. Because it is such an amazing song. So
it's a really good song.
Working with them,
it was a huge learning curve. And people who are collaborative musicians will know that every time you start collaborating with a new musician, there's a learning curve as far as, like, the language that you use with them. Every musician has their own way of talking about music. And so figuring out each other's language and then how you're going to speak to each other about things is a whole exercise in and of itself, which happened to a large extent during the pre-production phase, where Heather and I would meet weekly and talk about the songs and why I wanted the songs to be on the album and what the songs were about and what the kind of atmosphere of the songs were. I very much talk about my songs all have a landscape that they live in, is how I conceptualize them. And what kind of instrumentation and why and all that kind of stuff. So that was really good. And then being in the recording studio with Heather, was another set of huge learning curves, but she was so supportive at every step. Like, I, as a kid, was told that I couldn't sing. I'll put
this
that out there.
Going, excuse me, pardon? What?
Yeah, so...
Can we smack that person silly? Because you could definitely sing.
Well, I have this thing where I don't sing by ear. I actually sing by kinesthetic sensation. And it took a really long time to figure that out because everybody who teaches voice teaches by what pitch do you hear. And that is really hard for me. In fact, if I think about that too hard, I will lose all track of what pitch is where and what is coming out of my mouth. And it's very discombobulating. And so the first time I ever started to figure it out was with one of my old piano teachers, who is also a accompanist, collaborative pianist, classically. And she was helping me prep my audition solos for college and was playing for me as we recorded them. And she just said, you know, stand with your back pressed up against my grand piano and put your hand in just on the soundboard away from the strings. And I sang in tune for the entire take, which was really new for me. And it was effortless. And so that's when I started to kind of feel like, and then also singing in choirs, you know, you're in that bath of sound. And I started to realize that when I stopped thinking so hard about what I was hearing and just felt my way into the music, I was in tune, as opposed to not always being in tune, which was, you know, not helpful for a concert choir that traveled and was supposed to be ambassadors for your college.
So that right there is some really good advice for anybody who's out there who is singing, who mm-hmm. might be struggling. Here's another way you can look at trying to find that pitch that you need to hit.
Yeah.
That might be more comfortable for you. So I challenge everybody out there who sings to try that at least once.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Mm-hmm. Try something different. It could work for you. And if it doesn't, you've learned something and you can just walk away from it.
Yeah. 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 So that was a whole process in the recording booth because you don't have physical sound. You just have the cans. And that was really hard for me. And so it actually required Heather to kind of think on her feet and be like, okay, how can I manipulate these frequencies so that Rachel has more of a sensation of like physical sound in her ears to help her kind of, especially with recording my own harmonies. That was a whole journey.
They sound good.
Thank you. Some of them took a while.
There's a couple that I'm sitting listening to them and I go, ooh, oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, back to the lyrics of the song now.
Yeah. 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 Ben wasn't as involved in the whole process as Heather was. He was always kind of in the background. He helped us set up the tech the first time and dealt with all the havoc that was happening that first day. It was a lot, but you know, we got there. Thank you, Ben. You're an angel. An angel in biker gear.
Hey, whatever works.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really good experience. It was just a lot of new things. And I can't thank them enough for knowing all the things. You know, anytime I had a question, or even now that I'm still doing kind of setup on Patreon and websites and all that kind of stuff, doing social media promo. It's really, really helpful to have people who have been around the block numerous times to say, hey, I have this in mind. Is that a good idea? Is that, will that work? Do you have any tweaks that you think would make it better or smoother or whatever? And they're always willing to give feedback like that.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. I've known Heather now for 26 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I've been around since Heather was putting out her first cassette tapes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we still have those and they're autographed, and we have some of her songbooks and some of those are autographed.
Nice.
So yeah, we've seen Heather start as a musician and do the, I think I want to do this thing to writing a few songs and going, I don't know if they're any good to now doing this and helping other musicians. So Heather's journey, I would love to at some point, Heather, if you're listening to this, take note, sit down with you and discuss this 26-year journey you've had. And if there are musicians out there that might want to get in touch with you, how they can do that.
Because,
you know, everybody, there's more Rachels out there.
There are.
Have great stuff.
That 100%.
Could be doing this.
Yep.
That just need that little helping hand.
Yeah.
And I'm here to play their music after it's been recorded. Anything that's come out of Ben and Heather's studios has, there's never been anything I wouldn't play, which is pretty awesome that they've had a hand in all this fantastic music that is now out there in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a lot of music.
It is.
So, did you do a lot of rewrites with your music? Was it just you had it ready to go when you got to Heather? Was most there of stuff it, that evolved as you were doing it?
Yeah, most of it was ready to go. The one that had the most rewrites was Stealing Through the Dawn. Was a whole verse shorter when it was first proposed and had a different arrangement. So that one has seen the most change, as it were, in workshop. I'm trying to think now, just looking through the list. Everything else pretty much was ready to go. There's a few that came out of FOM this past year, which is February Album Writing Month, for those of you who don't know, which is a fabulous, if you want to get started as a musician and you're, you know, just really feeling like a fledgling and you want a super positive, community-minded place to just workshop stuff and just make musical messes, FOM is absolutely wonderful. It's free, or you can donate to it to help them run it. And it runs the whole month of February. You know, people do anywhere from just writing one song and just starting the process to writing a whole album. I wrote 24 songs my first FOM because I'm an overachiever.
That is pretty awesome. And when we get this posted to the website, we will put links for that into the show notes so other mm-hmm. musicians can find it. For those who have been around, that's kind of like Napod Pomo for us podcasters.
Yeah, yep.
Where we podcast every day for an entire month.
Mm-hmm.
I have not done that this year. This month was too crazy. But if there's support for it, I may try it again next year.
Oh, nice.
And if anybody's listening, go check out The Big Slurp. Dave from the Bugcast is doing Napod Pomo, and ooh, his are very interesting because it's just him thinking about things for the day.
Oh.
Oh, yeah,
that could be really fun. Probably.
And they're great because they're 10 minutes or less.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it doesn't take up a big chunk of your day.
Exactly.
I listen to 3 on my commute to work.
There you go.
So I can play catch up every couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, NaNoWriMo for writers.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great that we all these creative types get these months where we can do things mm-hmm. and people give us feedback. And
yeah.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see what else we do. Before you put this album together, before the whole process started, what would you say your biggest musical achievement was?
Oh, that's easy. I got to be the soprano soloist for Stratford Concert Choir's Messiah in 2018. That was a big musical achievement. And it was even bigger because my first exposure to classical music was my Oma, paternal grandmother, took me to a few performances of Messiah when I was 7 or 8 in Chatham, and I absolutely fell in love with it. Really wanted to do that Shepherds Lying in the Fields recitative from the time I first heard it, and she got to come and see me perform that whole performance. Wow. Which was really, really special.
And Stratford does make a very, very big production of this every mm-hmm. year.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that they haven't done it the last year or so with COVID, but...
No, yeah. I don't know if they're doing it this year. I know the choir is rehearsing again together, and I know they did a Remembrance Day performance, but they actually, their director, who was the one, that's how I got the gig, he was also my organ teacher. He actually retired, so they have a new director for the choir, so I'm not sure if that means that, you know, artistic choices are going to change and if repertoire is going to change. The Messiah is kind of an institution now, so I would be surprised if that changed, but who knows?
Who knows? So if you're in Stratford around Christmas time,
mm-hmm.
it's something to go check out if you can get tickets.
It's usually a pretty good performance.
Awesome. Oh, see, we did that question. If you were to decide to do another album, which I'm pretty sure you're going to do. There's at some point in time.
Two that live in my brain right now.
Oh, there we go. We got stuff to look forward to. What have you learned from the process this time? And is there anything that you know is going to stay the same? And is there anything that you definitely need to change for the next album?
Oh, interesting. Mm. I learned a lot about myself and just what I want out of a working relationship. I do much better with solid schedules than with get this done when you have time. That does not make my brain feel secure.
Hi, we need this by Friday. Can you handle that?
And it's a tough thing, right? Because when Heather says stuff, you know that it's coming from a place of like, I don't want to put too much pressure on you. Like, don't feel rushed. Get it done when it feels good to you. But that doesn't feel good to me. And so, you know, that was part of the whole like getting to know each other and how we work and how to talk to each other in a really efficient way. So for me, I think I would go into the making of an album with kind of a projected timeline. I would definitely do a lot more playing around on my own of demos before the official recording process and really work out my harmonies more and play around with different instrumental textures and just like exactly how I'm envisioning, you know, what kind of stuff I would like. I need to learn how to play with a metronome better for my own piano written stuff.
I think that's something all of us struggle with, no matter what you're doing.
There were tears and screams of frustration this time around.
Maybe one of those beat watches instead of the metronome.
Oh, maybe. Then it's kinesthetic. That would probably be a good investment for me. Yeah, definitely.
See? I got you.
Yeah, you do.
Because
the metallic click of most metronomes now, my brain likes to tune out after a certain amount of time, which is a problem. And then the other problem is that I get very distracted by the lights that blink from a lot of the metronomes. And I end up just like anxiously being like, I'm going to anticipate the light blinks now and then, you know.
And then it's not the music.
It's not musical.
See, people, it's not just you that struggle with these things. It's There's not. Real people all over the world. We struggle with these things too.
Yep.
And keeping the beat is hard, especially when it's not your music you're trying to play.
Well, and I'm very much a legato rubato kind of musician, which is great for a live performance, not so great when you want drums in the background.
Yeah, especially if it's a drum machine.
Exactly.
Yeah, much more challenging. Mm-hmm. Click tracks are fun, but so you have lots of stuff you've learned, lots of stuff you can implement for the next album. Are there any plans at this point to sit down and start working on the next album? Or are you going to wait and see how this one takes off?
I am in a phase that I describe right now as take notes, not action. So I have lots of ideas and I just quietly scribble them down and save them for later. I'm currently working on writing some songs that are inspired by the women in my matriarchal line and birds. They all have a bird that is associated with them.
Bless you, John.
Yes. So I have one written for my maternal grandmother that's based on her life and also the cardinal. She was a lover of cardinals. And so there's a legend from a specific indigenous tribe that I'm forgetting the name of that has a story about a cardinal, and the cardinal is referred to as the bright spot. And so that song is written. I wrote a song about my paternal grandmother, my Oma. So I'm working on more songs. That's probably about a 6 or 7 song EP that'll happen at some point. And then I have a whole collection of songs that I have written about the colic. And so I would really like to put together an album of all of those.
At some point. Some violin, some tin whistle, some fiddle.
Definitely some tin whistle. I would love some fiddle, especially some electric fiddle.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. We kind of need some snarly winter stormy wind kind of things happening.
That'll be fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I get dibs on playing that first.
Sure.
That's going to come here after all the little sneak peeks and previews on Facebook and mm-hmm. wherever else you put them out.
Yes.
So if you guys haven't been checking it out, Rachel has been putting little snippet previews up on her Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. And I have shared some of them on the Insomnia Radio Canada page because we're here to support everybody. And hopefully you guys have been checking those out and getting excited about this album. Oh, did you have any big surprises while you were recording this album? Just like one of those light bulb moments or an aha or something that really surprised you about the whole process?
The first thing that really surprised me was the song that got recorded in 15 minutes.
That never happens.
Oh, it did. this song, and it's an emotional beast of a song, which is makes it even better. The breaking. So still. I did the vocals for that in 15 minutes.
And it was like, one take,
and
you're done.
Heather
it's
looked
good.
At me and went, yeah, that's it.
That's always awesome. So yeah. Now you guys are going to have to listen to that song with a new perspective instead of eyes when you listen to it.
Yeah. And the other surprises, I was super surprised, not that the bass and the slide guitar happened on Sovereignty, but just how happy it made me. I danced in my seat the first time I heard that final, not the final mix, but the first mix of all of those elements together. I was so happy. And then there's a big surprise on Stirring Up Sparks, because I have two other voices on that one.
Ooh.
And Suge, S.J. Tucker, did djembes for it. And
that's
it
really
is
exciting.
Amazing.
S.J. Tucker has a really awesome feed out there that you guys can all go check out. Mm-hmm. She is pretty awesome.
She's amazing.
Mm. Yeah. She's my go-to. I need something to listen to.
Yeah.
And I can just grab it and go and let it play on the...
I have students at school who will ask to listen to the Raven song.
Nice.
The Ravens in the Library.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's most of my questions, which is kind of scary.
Wow.
I know. We covered a lot of stuff.
We did.
We've been sitting here talking for just over 40 minutes.
Impressive.
Is there anything exciting about the album that you want to share? Do you want to tell everybody about the release date, where they can get their hands on it?
It's coming out on December 4th, which is...
around the corner.
2 weeks away.
Around the corner.
It's so around the corner. It's amazing. It will be up on, you will be able to get it through amphismusic.com. I will have a website through their store and page. And there will be links on my Facebook, Rachel Hootsing, H-U-I-T-S-I-N-G, and Rachel Hootsing Music, my musician page on Facebook. I'm at Rachel Hootsing on Instagram. There will be links there as well. I'm sure there'll be a link through onlineconcertthing.com. If you're there listening or getting tickets to concerts and things like that, you'll be able to find it there. So yeah, it'll be lots of
everywhere
places.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when we finally get this onto the Insomnia Radio Canada page, there'll be all those links on the page because we're going to share them all over the place.
Yeah
awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So just around the corner. And is there a particular song that you were releasing as the first single that you're having people promote? Or are you going to go with just track one because you want people to listen to it in order?
Oh, yeah. See, I haven't even thought about that specifically. I think if I had to pick a single, I would probably be stuck between Meeting the Phoenix and Jeremy's Lullaby.
Mm.
Those are the two with, I think, the biggest appeal.
Yeah.
I do also want to say before we go that there is one song on this album that I did not write the lyrics for. And this also came out through FOM. So a big thing in FOM is to collaborate with people because, you know, you work with better musicians, you start to make better music, and then you can work with better musicians and then you make better music, and on it goes. So Ghost Girl actually was written by Nathan Spears, and I was floating around through FOM and read this set of lyrics that he put together, and it was all gothic and yearning and yummy, and I immediately emailed him and was like, can I write music to that because it's so beautiful and blah blah blah. He's like, yeah, sure, totally, have a stab. And so I wrote this very operatically informed melody and kind of seesaw-y piano underneath it. And yeah, I'm really happy with how it turned out.
He liked it enough that he let you use his
lyrics. He liked it enough that he let me use his lyrics, and he was all excited when I told him that I wanted to put it on the album. And so, yeah, his name will be in the metadata if you want to look him up too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for sitting down with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Everybody should go check out Rachel's album. Go on over to Insomnia Radio Canada and check out more of her music and all the fun links.
I don't think we've said the name of the album.
Oh, we haven't. We've talked about this album for like 45 minutes now.
The album is called Facing Into the Wind.
Ooh. That has big words and big journey set all over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, go check it out. I will leave you all the fantastic links. There will be posts on the Insomnia Radio Facebook and Instagram, so you can check out more of Rachel's stuff. And thank you for tuning in to this special episode.
Thanks.
Sovereign.